Okay, good day everyone, and we are just 2 days away from Malaysia Day 2023. Joining me here today is Lyra.
Hello.
And Lyra, remember last year we did an episode on 16th of September?
Yes, most definitely. We have some friends.
David Tian and Tina join us, and we're just talking about the significance of 16th of September, and we sort of compare with 31st of August in that episode, right? Now, before we get into what we want to discuss today, do you feel people still get caught into, you know, especially those from Sabah and Sarawak, why should we celebrate 31st of August?
Yeah, actually, I did feel somewhat it is the sort of atmosphere because I was just doing one Starbucks challenge. Basically, you have to shout, I am from Malaysia. And just to get some, I think it was 31% off for the drink.
Okay.
So then when I post it, because you kind of, obviously when you do this sort of challenge, you want to post it on your social media. But I did somewhat feel, are my friends judging me for celebrating 31st of August?
You mean from their comments?
No, I mean, I guess it's just like a vibe that you get.
Maybe, lack of comment.
Yeah.
Someone was just telling me in Sarawak, nobody celebrated 31st of August. In a sense, you don't see Malaysian flag like everywhere here in Peninsula. But there is an event I heard in Muka. So obviously the government is not going to be able to deny 31st of August. But then, of course, some people don't even want to celebrate 16th of September because they claim that Sarawak did not actually have independence and therefore cannot legally join Malaysia. But that's another question for another time. But anyway, Malaysia Day, and I think we're going to do what we did the last episode. Just try to break down the issues with several questions, which we try to answer, hopefully. And so the first one, of course, before we even talk about the significance of the Malaysia Day, is really to look back at the last 1 year, because 16th of September 2022 until now, how much has changed in these 365 days?
Obviously, the change of government.
Yeah, that's a major one, right? And I think we just kind of want to bring our viewers and listeners back to September 2022. And remember at that time, you know, Zahid, of course, now is Deputy Prime Minister, and he wasn't even, was he in cabinet at that time, Zahid? He wasn't, right?
No.
No, but he was pulling a string and forcing Prime Minister Sabri to have election, right? And a couple of months before that, remember the Johor elections, they did very, very well. And then after that, we have kind of back to normal, I guess. People can travel. Lockdown is over. My Sejahtera finally don't need to use anymore.
Hooray.
And we had to wait for almost a year before mask mandate almost gone. I mean, you go to a hospital, you still need, which is unbelievable. But then, what other observation can you make? You know, what has changed? You know, maybe the mood or certain things that you noticed the last 1 year?
No, I guess earlier on, when we see this time around last year, you basically see, especially like Sarawakian leaders, they are really mooting for, like, why should we be celebrating 31st of August? I mean, obviously, they are more into Malaysia Day and even Sarawak Independence Day celebration. But to them, it is a big no-no. Especially, you're talking about, like, SUPP leaders, those sort of caliber. But the thing is, this year, it doesn't seem like they are really mooting for that sort of sentiment. I guess my guess would be because GPS is part of the unity government. And so the theme that you have been seeing over the last year, I think the major change would be, hey, guys, let's rally behind together and let's get, like, really support this unity government. Let's really champion this Malaysia Madani. So I felt like that's really the shift in terms of the mood or even the sort of message that especially like Sarawakian leaders want to push out. So I felt like that probably has some sort of to do with maybe let's lay low a little bit on the pro-Sarawak independence sort of movement and let's just rally behind this. And also because I guess last week we just talked about the DNAA.
Yep.
I mean, verdict for our Deputy Prime Minister. So I guess maybe the mood is really just to, like, hey, let's have unity.
So do you feel like maybe we are entering into the stability phase of the Madani government 9 months into general elections?
I think that would be what our prime minister is pushing for. I mean, I'm not sure exactly if we are quite there yet, but generally, I think people are really getting back into like business as usual sort of mode and really just, I guess, just getting into the drift of this whole Malaysia Madani thing. I mean, obviously, I guess the only thing that stuck with me on Malaysia Madani is the word progressive. The rest, I mean, I just had to search it out and see what's the theme for this year. And Tegak Perpaduan. So that's really like unity government. Let's have unity
maintain
together.
Unity government.
Yes.
And I think at least from GPS point of view, now, of course, we can talk about Sabah, but Sabah is a lot more fragmented, right? From GPS point of view, I think they are trying to show solidarity with Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim.
I think so.
And just try to not rock the boat. And so you don't see a lot of the overt call for independence and things like that. But we'll talk about that a bit later, okay? Now, the second question, I think, a little bit to do with what we discussed the last round. I just listened to the last episode, and it's quite interesting. I mean, we just kind of compare 31st of August and 16th of September, and even how old is Malaysia. People get confused and different, especially in Peninsular Malaysia. But don't talk about them. Even Sabah and Sarawakian were kind of confused for many, many years until maybe the last 15, 20 years. But here's the question. Should Sabah and Sarawak celebrate 31st of August, generally speaking? Okay, you go first.
Well, I think, generally speaking, I think anytime, I think Malaysians love public holidays. For that reason,
objection on that end, right?
Yeah, for that reason, I would say, why not? I mean, it's not like you are denying Sabah and Sarawak or denying Malaysia per se when you're celebrating 31st of August. I mean, you're celebrating independence of especially the West Malaysia part, the mm-hmm. Malaya part, whereby it's crucial, it's the backbone for really the formation of Sabah, Sarawak later on.
And
I mean, as in like formation of Malaysia per se.
What people say, well, do you celebrate independence of Singapore?
Well, but then they are very patriotic.
Actually, what is the independence of Singapore? I think it's kind of close, right? I mean, the date, I'm not too sure already. And have you heard the argument people use about the American Independence Day? You know, 4th of July. And it's like, hey, we have 50 states here. Everyone joined at different dates, but we maintain the same date. So I think they'll be like, okay, then we should maintain 31st of August. What do you say to that?
No, I mean, it's totally different. I mean, because here you are saying that we are celebrating Malaysia formation. So anyone can read the history and you can argue that 31st of August is definitely not the date that Malaysia was formed. So from that perspective, I mean, barring aside the fact that everyone loves public holiday, I think people should get the history right in the sense that mm-hmm. when is the formation of Malaysia, it is definitely on 16 September 1963. So there's no denying it because obviously Sabah and Sarawak and even Singapore joined Malaysia very, very much later. I mean, joined Malaya to form Malaysia very much later. But that doesn't deny the fact that that's the date of formation. I guess it's just because West Malaysians, they are very used to celebrating 31st of August. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that that's the date of formation. So I think at the end of the day, it looks at you have to look at the motive why you are celebrating this. Why are you championing 31st of August over 16th of September? I mean, why can't we all come to a consensus by saying that maybe 16th of September is really the date and
we kind of screw up for 50 years?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I think we only recognize Malaysia Day during the time of Prime Minister Najib.
So that was the time you were in high school, maybe?
Towards the end, I think.
Do you realize that people don't talk so much about 66 years? You know, if you follow 1957, it's 66, right? You don't see much emphasis on that this round.
Yeah, you have more on 60.
So what do you think? I mean, I was just putting a note here. I think, look, if the government really wants to settle this once and for all, maybe they can celebrate 31st of August as a regional kind of holiday. And but I know it's like such a paradigm shift, right? We celebrated for so long, and all of a sudden you say it's wrong, but it's not a wrong correction because history was really misrepresented for a long time. So what do you think about if the federal government just said, look, let's stop nationwide celebration of 31st of August. We can still celebrate. Those of us in Peninsula, let's have holiday. We don't mind, right? And you can have all the, I mean, August traditionally has been the shopping month, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Merdeka shopping, I think that's very, very common in Klang Valley. But then let's make 16th of September the true Malaysia Independence Day.
I think, honestly, when I was looking back and just thinking about the intention of Prime Minister Najib when he said that, because that was also the time when he was pushing out for One Malaysia, the slogan that is really mirrored after One Israel. I mean, but then you begin to see that really, I guess, he was trying to push for some sort of paradigm shift. I think it's more like both sides couldn't come to a consensus, as in I'm talking about Malaya, West Malaysia and East Malaysia, that you can't come to a general consensus because obviously, because we have been brainwashed, we have been thinking so much, like, the slogan for Merdeka is really because when Tunku Abdul Rahman was like shouting that Merdeka, Merdeka three times, again, I guess people couldn't get past that idea of Merdeka, Merdeka, Merdeka. But really, if you want to celebrate the spirit of liberty, I think people should really move away from 31st of August.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it because I'm a Sarawakian, but I'm just saying it. If we get the history right, I mean, we shouldn't be offended by the fact that it is indeed 16th of September. So if the federal government suddenly make a shift, I felt like nothing is impossible per se. I mean, you just need to have a mandate and that's it. And everyone can just come together and celebrate together. And obviously, I think East Malaysians, they could use some sort of patriotism that West Malaysian exhibit. I mean, like what you were saying just now, that they were just having a lot of flags, they decorate the cars, the offices with all these Malaysian flags. I think that we could really do quite a bit in Sabah and Sarawak.
Yeah, and even if it's a symbolic kind of gesture, it will show that, look, the government is serious about going back to what is the truth, you know, what is the historical truth. And I just sort of think about how this can apply to other areas also, such as affirmative action. It was never there in the first place until May 13th. Who will have the courage to start to say, look, we never have that. We never have Ketuangan Melayu. Who dares to say that? But let's start with something smaller. Let's just remove 31st of August. And I think if they can do this small step, then they can go into the bigger step, which is all the systemic issue we talk about in many, many episodes.
Yep.
But anyway, I think if you want to celebrate 31st of August, nothing wrong with that. And we totally support you by. In fact, we bought a lot of flats, right? But we just kind of forgot to bring it up here. Now I want to talk about a theme that we have been talking about quite a bit since we covered the state election, right? The six states election. So now I'm just going to read the question and then you can give your feedback first. Now, of course, with general elections over GE15, we have formation of unity government. Then we have the six state election also just kind of concluded, right? And we kept coming back to the theme of decentralization. So here's a question. Do you think voters are desiring some kind of decentralization? I mean, based on the result and based on how you're reading the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, I do think so. I mean, if you're looking at this whole shift, whether or not we like to call it green wave or not green wave, I mean, obviously, the whole state election results have sort of debunked the green wave narrative. But the thing is, I guess there's a lot of like the decades of brainwashing whereby we are just thinking about the sort of like social contract or even really the reliance on big government. Mm-hmm. I think people are really starting to see that, hey, we don't necessarily need big government per se. Because, I mean, especially when the slogan of, like, I mean, the thing that really just came back to my mind is really the Kita Jaga Kita kind of slogan. Mm-hmm. So I felt like if people could put that into context on day-to-day basis, whereby because we're talking about the populist move, what would be the sort of populist move that we'll be seeing in Malaysia? But obviously, it's not quite cultural war sort of championing yet, but it's really like the war over your day to day. Even how do we get people from B4T just being elevated to middle class? I mean, that is a challenge. I mean, obviously Malaysia has been formed for so many years and we still see that. I mean, the results of NAP is just devastating and it's just causing that group of people just continuously trapped in that cycle. So I felt like in that context and based on the voting pattern, they could just sort of shift the vote easily in a sense that they will be quick to abandon the once the champion, you know. I mean, like UMNO, who was formerly the champion of Malay Islam community, and you begin to see that, hey, the shift went to PN and maybe even some went to PH for depending on how they are championing it. So I felt like maybe there is an awareness for the need for decentralization. I mean, it's maybe very, very small steps, baby steps, but that I hope to see is actually really moving towards decentralization. And with the sort of messaging that our Prime Minister is pushing for, and even the formation of the whole unity government, it's just so fragmented that you really begin to see that, hey, no one is really the main person that is really holding the power here. So that could be a shift, but I think that's also the time where you could do a lot of things with really, really, if you're really talking about decentralization.
You know, I recently just went to Singapore and one of the things that really struck me was how prevalent big government thinking is, even in Singapore. Actually, I should say especially in Singapore, because what they have done well is really to take care of the lower economic social group. And these people have all the basic stuff. They won't starve to death. They will have education. They can go to university. They will get a job. They will retire well. And by taking care of these people, the government actually strongly promote big government. It's like you can depend on us. And so in Malaysia, the whole allure of big government sort of was shattered during pandemic time. That's why we have the, like what you say, the kita jaga kita kind of set up, because government just could not take care of many, many people. And I think that's really, you know, in terms of decentralization, I don't think we are at that juncture where people can start to actively move away from big government yet, because so many decades of brainwashing and things like that. But we need to start somewhere that people are like, hey, maybe what you provide as federal government is not what we need here locally. And we see that, I think the Green Wave is more representation of that. And also, and when you look at what's happening with some of the voices in East Malaysia, for example, I think it's a reflection of that. We don't want the federal government to control our livelihood. And of course, not realizing that, look, the state government, Sabah and Sarawak, have been kind of colluding with federal government for so long, you know. And so we ask a question, for example, you know, why the natives, for example, in Sarawak still continue to support GPS? Yes, it's eroding, but you cannot escape the fact that they were the one who put the government in place through their voting. And But why is the allure there? You know, it's really, I think, the big government, they are taking care of me. Of course, none of the government here in Malaysia are doing as well as Singapore. You know, imagine Singapore, if you are working class, you are not a liability to society, you will have a chance to buy at least a government subsidized flat. Imagine this, you are guaranteed to have some kind of property. Yes, it's government. Yes, it's leasehold. The moment you die, you cannot kind of pass it on to the next generation. But your own generation, Your next generation will have opportunity to buy. So I was just talking to a friend. I say, look, you know, if you're poor and needy, you will survive very well in Singapore, but the upward mobility is quite limited unless you are extremely rich. So it's really not a good place for middle class, but a great place for lower class and a great place for the uber rich. But anyway, we're not talking about Singapore, but I just kind of, you know, it comes to my mind, you know, what does it mean with big government, you know? And, you know, what is decentralization? Because it can be messy, right? Decentralization.
Obviously.
I mean, can you think of some messiness? I mean, it's like, now, who is the local government minister? Ngah Kormin, right? And remember one of the first thing he said was, no local election for now. And it kind of like, it's like those kind of, there is no goal here. Please don't come and disturb us. You know, those kind of things. It's just so such a, it's very jarring kind of thing, because it's like, and I think that's where we start to feel like, hey, unity government is not Pakatan Harapan, and people need to get used to it fast. But I can just imagine, right, local election, you are allowing people to put local councillor, and these people will do things that impact state elections, federal election. Kind of like, you know, like in Cebu, there used to be a saying, right? You know, whoever controls central market, right? We have the largest central market. Whoever controls food, right? Supply of food, you kind of control the emotion of the whole society.
Yeah, I mean, just now going back to why the natives are continuously voting in the corrupted government that we see that they are, because it's obviously because they are trapped in a sort of systemic corruption and systemic poverty cycle that they really do need that sort of welfare. I mean, if you're really going, because last week I was just talking about the part whereby we're going into like a state and really just the amount of time and even the infrastructure is not there. I mean, obviously you will just vote for whichever the one that can show you the real money, where the money is, you kind of just vote for it. I mean, I totally can understand that, but not that I agree with that, but you really do need to help this group of people to be elevated to the next level, because otherwise, how are they going to have even the basic amenities being constructed in their villages and even in a kampong? So those sort of things, but that would be where the local government will come in handy, because then if you have a set of budget and no one is neglected per se, I mean, everyone is just be given the chance of really just, hey, this is my community. I want to contribute back to my community. I think the current federal government, they really should have that sort of heart. I mean, if you have a heart of a people, regardless of, I mean, if you're in unity government, I mean, even just like Syed Saddiq, he was able to push for like Undi 18.
Yep.
I mean, if you have could just rally behind like those sort of support whereby people could just come and say that, hey, what we are really trying to demonstrate to the community is that we want to give back to the community, and this is one way of doing it, like local government, and you are not so power crazy, and you could just really, I think people will actually maybe a bit not used to it, but really just maybe a bit chaotic even, because we obviously do need some education on how to go about this whole thing, and obviously it's going to cost a lot of money, but once people see the benefit, I think people will buy it.
Yeah, and one of the things, of course, we kind of talk about is what the benefit of decentralization is also we are going to hopefully prevent another dictator like Mahathir. And because Mahathir is not just a centralization of political power, it's a centralization of all branches of government. You know, he destroyed the judiciary, he controlled the military and police and the civil service, you know, basically, that's why they call him the Mahafiruan, right? Have absolute power. But then, of course, the moment you give a bit of decentralization, I mean, take Undi 18, for example, the first federal election under Undi 18, and then we had the so-called green wave. And people are already blaming the youngster, right? And say, it's older, you know, these are not educated people. They have no awareness of politics. I mean, who are you to say that? I mean, in fact, when you look at the data, it's not the young people. It's really those people who chose not to vote that is influencing the outcome. And in fact, I was just so surprised that even, you know, we always say, look, the non-Malay vote, you know, always go to Pakatan Harapan. And, you know, we talked about a little bit of that last week, like how, you know, 95% of Chinese vote go to Pakatan Harapan, but then the turnout rate is so low, it's 60%. And in fact, in the last by-election, right, that just happened, they say 99% of Chinese vote go to Pakatan Unity. But then how many percent show up? 50%. So I mean, when you decentralize, you get this kind of problem and people don't want to vote. People get emotional and they don't like it and they sulk and things like that happen, right? But this leads us to the next question, right? I mean, we broadly talk about, decentralization is maybe happening, but, you know, like what we say, it is maybe not the kind that we've seen in the West. You know, people are concerned about the cultural war, the LGBT, the woke. I think not so much. But really, people are like, hey, are you going to be able to help me from an economic point of view? Are you going to allow me to pursue happiness? I think Malaysians are more into that, right?
Yeah, I mean, even if you just look at Zahid's DNA case, I mean, you see that a lot of backlash really come from those who are really politically educated people. I mean, you're not talking about like average Malaysians who, I mean, probably wouldn't even care to come out and vote for this sort of things. I mean, I'm just thinking that because, I mean, obviously, I guess Malaysians are somewhat used to, I mean, not that we are agreeing to the corruption nature and things like that, but then Malaysians are somewhat generally used to this sort of things, and this doesn't really bother them as much as, hey, can I bring food to the table?
Yep.
I mean, it's totally different. I mean, if you can't bring food to the table, I think they will be the first to go on the streets to riot and things like that. I mean, because obviously earlier on it was really like, I mean, even the eggs shortage crisis, I mean, that gives even more attention to the media rather than this whole case on its own.
Yeah, I was just laughing just now because I saw like in YouTube a very prominent lawyer, he has a YouTube channel, and he put a video, 4-part video, 14 reasons why Zahid DNAA was bad. 1-4, okay? And I was, in my mind, I mean, I know it's good argument, it's legitimate rule of law argument, but really at the back of my mind, I was like, who cares? Who cares? I think that's the general sentiment that I have when I talk to people, if they even want to talk about political stuff. I mean, so many people can't be bothered to even discuss, right? And when they want to discuss, a few of my friends, they'll be like, their sentiment, Malay or non-Malay, same. I'm talking, of course, from KL, Klang Valley point of view. It's like, this is inevitable. You want to have a Mandani government with UMNO, Barisan Nasional and Pakatan. This is a necessary compromise.
But I guess for Malaysians generally, I mean, because the things that came into my mind was really the Good Vibes Festival when during the cancellation. I think everyone was outraged. But it's really because a lot of the arguments that were being put forth were, hey, all these food vendors, they have already spent so much of money and how are we going to ever recover the cost? Because obviously we have put in so much effort to this and we have really done a lot of preparation just for this moment. But if you really boils down to the end of the day, it's really the dollar and cent that really counts, because they have put in the effort, they are expecting to make certain profit out of this, and yet now they are suffering losses. And really, it's just, I mean, everyone is not happy. I mean, generally Malaysians, they could agree on a set of values that we are not happy that the band was really doing some sort of provocative act on stage. And I mean, generally, I mean, regardless of who they are voting for, they are just, I mean, they are outraged by the whole thing, but they are even more outraged of the fact that the cancellation of the festival, it's really because of the money that is being affected. So I think really, even just from that sort of scenario, I mean, people are not happy with the DNAA case, but it doesn't bother them as much if it doesn't affect their pocket.
And you see, one of the recent news that kind of demonstrate that, you know, that Malaysians in general are more into pursuit of happiness. Remember the news a few days ago talking about the best street food, right? The best bread.
We see that
and
one.
And sorry, the best bread in the world by Taste At Last, you know, International Food Guide. Who is number one?
Roti Canai.
Roti Canai. And then, actually, I never really tasted Singapore's roti prata. And I don't know, have you tried it before?
I think maybe we'll think it's Roti Canai is still the best, I think.
Actually, I found out it's different. And prata is always sweet. And I was just talking to my father and he'll be like, Roti Canai, that is sweet, out. Because so many people like Roti Canai, kosong. Right? I think that's the number one choice. Then if you don't want kosong, telur. You don't want telur or kosong, telur bawang. 1, 2, 3, no sugar, no sweetness. So prata is out. And Singapore claim prata is the same, but it's only number 12. And in fact, I was just looking at the list, the original roti and the original chapati, all those from India, are ranked way, way outside. You know, those are the predecessor of Roti Canai. But anyway, the whole point is, this sort of thing kind of rally people.
So food is more important than...
food. And it kind of goes down to the emotion of, we just want to live our life. We don't want to have the burden of all the race, religion, things that is happening. We just want to be left alone and be able to pursue happiness. And that's why, you know, I think the next question leading to this is, we talk about, yes, maybe there's a desire, maybe. But what is the reality and how would this decentralization manifest? And I think this is not an easy question, but we just want to do a bit of forecasting and a bit of, not just feel through the whole thing, So here's the question, okay, in full, okay? So how do you see the development of pro-independence movement? Now, obviously, we cover a lot about Sarawak because we are very familiar with that. But I'm talking about around the nations. It's not just Sabah and Sarawak. Even Johor have their own Bangsa Johor, right? And then I think about even in KL, did you realize that there are some people in KL who will be like, hey, you all talk about it, you have state election, we don't even have a state election. And there are people in KL who felt like we should be a state. Also, yeah. Because since Putrajaya stole the land, you know, partially Negeri Sembilan and Selangor, then KL should be a state because, you see, you know the saying, right? You cannot have taxation without representation. You cannot take my money if I'm not represented. So I'm not just represented at federal level. I should be represented at a local level. How can we allow those who are not... DBKL is not voted in. And they have so much say over our local infrastructure. We refuse to have that. So there are people with this kind of mindset. And it is a kind of pro-independence, okay? But anyway, here's the first thing. How do you see... practically, how do you see... what's your take, you know, in terms of the development? You know, is it going to take time? Is it going to be purely political? Because one of the... Before you come in, I think one of the side effects of big government is that people have the tendency to think that all solution has to be political. And I think that's a very great limitation, I feel, because if that's the thing, that means once every 5 years, only your vote can change the country. I mean, how ridiculous is that, right? So, I mean, obviously we need political power, but maybe other things also, but just in very general first, so how do you see, what sort of practical things that can happen?
Well, I think a lot of local communities, they do have Rukun Tetangga, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even that is a form of voting.
Yep.
I mean, that is a form of taking accountability that I want my taman to look good. I mean, that's just a small way. But if people could just make it like scalable, so maybe some like the NGO and they could just come in, and even some think tank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that or like some charity body that just could come in and really just get certain support, maybe work together with local government and really just begin to push out for certain small agenda like certain civic education. I think that will really just cause people to have like a different kind of sense, or even like some gotong royong activity. I mean, you could see that a lot of non-political movement that, I mean, they just rally behind because they see that certain beach is like so dirty and they just want to have like some recycling campaign going on. And yet they could just really garner that sort of interest and really just get that sort of support. I think this is like small ways of contributing to the society. But I guess we were so used to big government, so used to welfare, that we think that everything, government is our solution. Government is the savior. But they are not. I mean, they have so much other things to do. And we could really just, I mean, because even like in a small SME company, I mean, you're not expecting like to have cleaners coming in day and night.
Yep.
And so who's going to maintain the cleanliness of the building? I mean, obviously the staff, they have to play a part. So you treat the whole company like your own house and you could get a decent company. I mean, the environment could be great. So if you do the same for your local community, who says that you can't rally like, hey, let's have gotong royong once a quarter, once half a year sort of things. And I mean, obviously, I mean, this gated guarded sort of concept is also a form of you wanting the security, your borders to be secured. I mean, so these are small things I think that people should just think outside of the box and really just think that, hey, actually, this is one way of accountability. I mean, one way of contributing back to the society.
And I think people need to have incentive. You know, you talk about cleaner just now, right? And, you know, just in my office, we only have a few people and we used to have cleaner coming in. And I think one day, one of my senior staff were like, you know, how much is a cleaner? And she was, wow, so expensive. So then she said, oh, no need to ask them to come. We will clean ourselves. And because they realize, like, for example, that the KPI depends on the profitability of the company also. Then they realize, hey, it's a small thing, you know, you don't spend on cleaner. How much can you say? It's a few hundred, maybe a few thousand per year. But their mindset is, hey, if we can reduce expenses, there is a benefit for me. So it's like, you want people to take accountability and responsibility, they have to be given incentive, right? Some kind of reward. And I think that's where government is supposed to come in. You know, you took all our taxes, you have all the power. You should motivate us to become self-starter rather than, you know, do all the things so that eventually you become like God and people need to rely on you. I think that's really how our politicians think, right? They think they are God. And I have the money. Ka-ching, ka-ching. You know, every now and then. I mean, in Sabah and Sarawak, those days was very, very bad. You see people really have a stacks of money. Now it's like, you know, Agong recently was doing the whole
Borneo tour,
right? And so I just asking my friend who was in business or different business, because when you used to have VIP coming in, then people will be like, oh, let's do event, let's do lucky draw, let's do handout and things like that. All those are banned this time. And I think Agong is like, hey, I don't want this kind of nonsense. Because, you know, the current Agong is kind of no-nonsense.
Yeah.
So then they're like, oh, actually, this time around, business was very bad. So it's like, yeah, I mean, we kind of have to move away from handout, and more handout. But it takes time. So every now and then you hear Prime Minister say, you know, we need to go to need-based system, and all of a sudden he go back to affirmative systems. You know, he is like kind of like neither here nor there. But I really do understand his contradiction, his constraint. You know, we talk about his constraint. And so that's the thing. I hope it's not easy, but start somewhere small. You know, like condo, for example. You know, condo, why do people care? Because it really affects them. It affects the value. It affects the quality of life. It affects whether they can use gym or they can install Astro. You know, all these small things. But once they feel like, hey, if I participate and the community is better, I also benefited from that. So that's the thing, I think it needs to come from there. The decentralization has to have some impact. But what do you think? Okay, let's go to another topic. Okay, let's talk about Madani, right? And because whenever we talk about independence, of course, at the moment, it's very much focused on Sabah and Sarawak. But we are, both of us are from Sarawak. So we have a lot of encounter with Sarawak independence move. But what do you think about Madani? You know, because it seems like Anwar Ibrahim has been giving more power, autonomy, privileges to Sarawak, returning the land, allowing them to collect sales and service tax. And these days, Abanjo seems to be in good mood most of the time.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Now, one of our friends, right, I remember David Tian, right, and a few months ago, he said, looks like the pro-independence spirit is sort of dampened by Pepaduan. He likes to use the word Pepaduan. But anyway, so what do you think? Do you feel that on the eve, 1 or 2 days before Malaysia Day, that the pro-independence move is just sort of maybe a bit subdued for the moment?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just at the very beginning of this podcast episode, I mean, I was just saying that last year we hear about the leaders talking, Sarawakian leaders mm-hmm. talking about pro-independence. I mean, really just pushing for like state rights, those sort of things. And yet now you already have a taste of some of the state rights. So I felt like that really is a shift, or maybe like what you were saying, the dampening of the spirit of pro-independence. And maybe before time, I don't know, maybe the whole movement will have to be shifted to something else, like some sort of populist move that is going on.
Yeah, we kept saying, right, I mean, is there a desire for it? Is there a feasibility of hard independence? And time again, we kind of go back to the election result. We go back to what we are seeing. We don't quite see the evidence quite yet. But I guess this whole spirit of decentralization allows people to have this kind of aspiration. Don't you think so? And so I'm going to say, look, you know, if you are inclined towards that, then by all means, you should be given the freedom. You know, nobody should be threatened with sedition act or things like that. But you have to try to persuade people. And that's why, you know, we talk about this quite frequently, right? And we're just like, you know, how does it look like? And is there a mood? You know, we constantly talk about that. But what are they actually wanting to do? I mean, in terms of the pro-independence group, what do you think they're trying to achieve?
honestly, I don't see a real manifesto that is coming out from them.
I mean, they talk about the results that we want out for Malaysia.
Yeah, because the closest comparison that I've heard from the move itself would be, hey, we can become like a Dubai. I mean, we can be very, very rich. And obviously, again, it goes back to the pursuit for prosperity, pursuit for happiness. I felt like if Sarawakians and even Sabahans, if they are being given the sort of rights and you don't have so much of outflux of people really just coming to West Malaysia to find an opportunity and things like that, maybe if there is more opportunity that is being given to the land, I felt like the whole mood, whole atmosphere will be changed. So I'm not too sure. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean it's a bit hard to read because, you know, when they mention Dubai, I actually think Singapore. And if our future is Singapore, I don't really want it. Because you see, one of the things about Sarawak, for example, is what we lack is really the market. We don't have the population. So, you know, you don't have a big market. Yes, you have the natural resources. So maybe that's why they use Middle East nation and comparisons. But what is the guarantee that all this prosperity will go back to the people? Because, you know, my observation on Singapore is that, yes, it's a very comfortable place to live. People are taken care of. But there is just a ceiling there. There is a glass ceiling on the lower middle category. Now, I know people might not agree with me, but this is, I really felt very strongly all my life. And this trip, I just felt like there's a limitation in what you can do. And unless you are uber rich, then it's a different category. And so if that's the picture, then I'm not sure. I'm not really in favor of that. Because, I mean, it's like, you have the wealth, but are you better as a nation? I mean, we're not saying it must be like this, it cannot be like that, but I guess it's like we want people who desire this kind of outcome to maybe articulate their argument a bit more. Give example, maybe, because so far, I mean, their argument is the same, right? I mean, the last 2 or 3 years, I mean, I can understand where the legal argument comes from, where the prosperity argument comes from, but I just feel like it's not quite enough like there's a lot of gap there. And some more, do you feel like maybe because of all the privileges that, you know, by joining the Papaduan, now Premier Abang Joe can say, look, you know, we are creating a more prosperous place, you know, we have, you know, Cebu, you know, we have cheap university, people can go in there, you know, they have more schools now, English is official language, and they have more funding for health. And you know, it's almost like decentralization is already happening. So it's like, do you feel like people are maybe more satisfied? I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing this out because the state government will say we have a great mandate based on the last state election. Indeed, they had, right? They won almost all the seats, right? Except one or two. I mean, of course, a lot of people cannot come back. People like you and me and things like that. But that's besides the point. But do you feel like Premier Abang Joe is trying to portray this kind of picture? Hey, people are so satisfied with me. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, he's very tactical as well. I mean,
he's very measured. I have to give him that he doesn't gloat and just say the pro-independence, you guys are nah, you know, that kind of thing. You are like down and out. He doesn't do that kind of game. And he's very measured, but he's very confident of where he stands at the moment, I feel. And he seems happy with Mardani because Anwar needs him more than he needs Anwar.
I think I felt like he actually probably felt relieved that he actually dodged a bullet. I mean, with the performance that people are, I guess he could really gauge the sort of sentiment that people are feeling towards Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, because even with the DNA case, people are not really like left-right bashing our Prime Minister. So I felt like probably he felt relief in a sense. So he was also in a good mood, but also really he could portray to the people, because with a Prime Minister that is supportive of decentralization, he could say that, hey, I'm actually doing a lot of good favor to Sarawakians.
I mean, someone said GPS was the most impressive turnaround job. Restructuring, and because let's not forget that Premier Banjo and many of the senior cabinet of GPS are actually part of Tai Mahmood's administration for a long time. So that is another point which, you know, when I think about Zahid DNAA is really if Malaysia wants to move on. Now, I know people talk about the rule of law, we need to, you know, settle the account and things like that. But remember, we talk about political retribution and things like that. It's not going to end, right? And it's like, if you persecute Najib now and Zahid now, one day if UMNO comes back to power, they will want to persecute you back. And then if PAS comes to power, they want to persecute you. It's never ending, right? So, I don't know. I know a lot of people will be like, oh, cannot. They stole a lot of money. But what about someone like Aban Joe, who is 20 plus years in Tai Mahmood's administration and nothing will be done to him? Is that fair? Is that the right way forward? So one of the things I feel with decentralization is we have to look at the big picture and, you know, maybe just have a real cut off there in terms of persecution.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you were saying. I mean, on a private conversation, that you'd rather justice be served to that one deserving person. I mean, you'd rather like having the criminals escaping justices rather than having one innocent people that is being persecuted because of the failure of the system. So, I mean, if I really have to choose, I think I would choose the fact that I want every innocent people to be properly given the rights to liberty.
Yeah, and I guess the whole thing with Najib, Wang NDB, the outrage, and it's really the media. You know, whatever the media wants to highlight, it will become the number one biggest news. So there's that emotion part, the expectation part. And I think, you know, we kind of want to wrap up already that if we really go into the decentralization path, we're going to have to put up with many competing ideas that people will want different kind of administration. So for example, Sarawak having English, you know, and maybe certain industry will be like, we don't want to use Bahasa Melayu, for example. And I know you'll be like, wow, what an outrage. But for example, you know, the legal community, seriously, most lawyers will be like, oh, come on, please. You know, the law are not created in Bahasa Melayu. The case law, a few thousand years of case law are all in English. It's like
a lot of translation.
You can't. I mean, certain things maybe you can, technical things, technology things. I mean, look at Korea, Japan, they translate all the stamps stuff, but I don't think you can translate common law properly. So you know, up till today, very, very interesting, the two area that I used to be involved with. One of course, is there's one act, which is the marriage and divorce. Another one is the winding up rules. And both these, as far as I know, are still, if you go to court, you have to use English. Why? Because nobody bothered to translate to Bahasa Malaysia. Bahasa Melayu. Actually, I don't even know they use Bahasa Malaysia or Bahasa Melayu now. See, that's how confused people are. But this is just an example. If we really accept decentralization, then it's okay, right? It's okay that you have TNB. We have TNB here. You have Sarawak Energy in Sarawak. And the tariffs are so different.
Yep.
Actually, it's so different. I was shocked recently. I compared the electricity bill. So much cheaper in Sarawak. Wow, TNB is really killing us. But anyway, that's... But it's like, oh, you choose to stay here, your land has more value, you pay more. Okay, that's the effect of decentralization, I guess. All right, so to wrap out, I know it's a Malaysia Day, and you know, early on, I kind of put a question and say, you know, maybe you want to predict what's going to happen the next 12 months, but I think that's a bit too ambitious. But
far-fetched.
But how do you see, I mean, in 2 days' time, say it's 16th of September, how would you like to celebrate Malaysia Day?
Well, celebrating with food. With roti canai.
Roti canai. No, I mean, what, you know what I mean, right? It's like, what are you looking forward to? You know, it's like, you know, we last week we talked about, you know, is PMX still the one, et cetera, et cetera. But what are some of your hope, I guess? Maybe hope is a better term going forward for our nation.
Well, guess, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's really just boiling down to the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope that whichever things that the government is doing, and I do see that Prime Minister, he's still the one. I mean, he's still the leader that is most suited for this transitional time for Malaysia, and really just causing Malaysia to be completely shifted out of a season of really just being in that sort of limbo, like neither here nor there sort of moment to really, I mean, you're already beginning to see, like, people are really just rejoicing over the fact that we have, like, Tesla coming in, I mean, Starlink, I mean, even, like, other big businesses that are coming in, like, investment are starting to flow in. So I felt like that is really the sort of new beginning that I hope to see for Malaysia. Mm. And I felt like he could really be the one that, I mean, he is smooth in terms of his speech and he's persuasive. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So, so on that note, I mean, we really do have to give him the credit for really being able to just cause the whole unity government to really just stand on the feet. I don't think he should be bothered as much on whether or not UMNO survives. I mean, that's really not his job because that's not his party. So it's still like sort of like outside of his boundary in a sense. I mean, except where it concerns the unity government. But if he really just, I mean, he was able to just pull through this tight and I felt like there's nothing else that he couldn't do. I mean, if he just set his mind to do it and if the other PKR leaders will also just humble themselves and really just go down to Turun Padang, I felt like the whole Malaysia Madani sort of perspective really could materialize.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Prime Minister, you know, he should be involved with UMNO as far as it continue to cause Madani to be stable. And I think that's really the motivation for his support. And for me, you know, I kept looking at the pro-independence movement in Sarawak. And, you know, I kind of have a bit of thinking and consideration myself. And I really feel like it is the absolute right of people to have that kind of aspirations. But I feel like there needs to be more engagement and articulation. Personally, because of how our nation could be from a cultural point of view, the Rainbow Nation, I personally prefer, now this is a preference, okay? It's an opinion. I prefer Malaysia to continue as it is. But I also feel that it is up to Malaya to persuade Sabah and Sarawak that it is still worthwhile to continue.
So like a courting?
Yeah, I think when we talk about the bridge, you know, it's like when parties want to divorce, people can put on the list, right? You have done this, you have done that. You know, the husband would say this, the wife would say this. At the end of the day, I don't feel like it's who is more at fault. But if we want to ask the question, who is more at fault? Yeah, I think without a shadow of doubt, it is Malaya. So that's why I say, you know, they also have more political power. They also are the one that kind of started a lot of the systemic issue. So in a way, they have an obligation to show to Sabah and Sarawak that this union is worth fighting for. And that's why they should take very seriously, you know, when people say, look, maybe it's better for us to be independent. I totally respect those kind of opinion, but of course, I think they will need to be able to show they have the political power to do it. But my personal desire is that the nation remains because I see, I mean, just an example, we say Roti Canai kind of thing. It's like if we are split into three nations, you can't even celebrate those kind of thing. I mean, it's very
no
tiny.
More Roti Canai for you.
Yeah, I mean, there is Roti Canai, but it doesn't belong to Sabah. It doesn't belong to Sarawak, you know. But now Malaysia, it belongs to all of us.
No, we have Kampua.
Yeah, I mean, it will be a different kind of thing and still great, but not the same. So it's like, you know, people talk about California want to secede. People talk about Texas want to secede. Because those states by themselves are going to be top 10 economy in the world. Easily. So they could survive on their own, but will they be greater or will they be worse? That's the question, right? If you can be greater together, then isn't that worth fighting for? So that's really my thinking and that's my opinion. I stand firm with that. But I very much would like to engage with people who are pro-independence, and maybe that's what we should be doing in the next few weeks.
Maybe.
And just hear them out. You know, I'm like, look, persuade me. Persuade me. Not quite yet persuaded. So that's the aspiration for Malaysia there. But nevertheless, like you say, we're going to celebrate it. And history is what it is. You can't change it. But you can determine how you want to move forward, I guess.
Totally agree.
All right. So that's all the time we have for today. And, you know, and yeah, we kind of remember the song that we played last year, right?
Yeah.
Well, is it called Malaysia Together, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, you may see some of the snippets in our social media because that is a bit like a prophecy, I guess, that we are meant to be together, but people make choices, and when they don't want to be together, then that promise will not come to realization. I guess it's the same with marriage, right? That people will be like, we want to be together, but circumstances cause us to drift apart. But those are the things that we have to think about. All right, so that's all we have for today. And until next time.
All right.
Hopefully not till next year, right? Okay, all right. No. Bye-bye for now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Malaysia.